there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all of the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons. So it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Mulling It Over. Again, we are joined with Kayla Rivera.
Hola.
Welcome. Thank you for being here. And my name is Jason Conforto. I'm the host of Mulling It Over. And we are joined with...
Shelley Brown.
And Chad Morris. You were waiting for us.
I was waiting for you guys. Yeah, I was giving you the podcast look. Like, jump in. So
we caught it. We were just slow.
So last time, we teased a horrific episode. Mm-hmm. And that's because we have two horror novelists today with us.
Children's horror.
Children's horror. And then two bald men. So that's...
which is kind of horrific.
Which is very horrific. So that is...
We're all so scary.
And we're going to just have kind of an open discussion about writing horror for children. And my first question is, why?
Why
would you do this, you monsters?
Because as a child, I craved good horror.
Oh, yeah.
And as a child, it was not presented to me very well. Like, I felt like most children's literature, as far as scary books went, were really weak. I wasn't scared.
It feels like you're calling out specifically Goosebumps.
I am, but I wasn't going to. My goodness! But it did just feel silly to me. Like, this isn't actually scary. Like, I think my parents didn't have enough filters on our television, and I watched genuinely scary stuff.
Right.
And so then when I would pick up a book at the library and be like, I'm going to read a scary book.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, this isn't scary. And then the next level up is like basically Stephen King at that time.
Right. Mm.
There was not a lot of middle ground for like children
to like
scary.
Bridge the gap.
Yeah.
And I just, as I was writing for children, I was just like, you know what I craved as a child was a legitimately scary book that didn't go into really yucky places, but that really did. Like spine tingle, like actually scare me.
Yeah. No, I love that. That's great. Kayla, what about you? What kind of drew you to writing horror for children?
Yeah, I think for me, it was honestly like I mentioned this in a previous episode, but CC was nominated for a horror award despite the fact that it's not a horror or it was not intended to be. and my next
but
one
it has
is,
characters that you would expect in a horror.
Yes.
We have witches. We have ghost kind of characters.
We have demons that we don't call demons.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. We have things that go bump in the night and things that tear you out of your bed and out of your house.
But it's not a horror.
It's just a very
But you have a book. But you have a book coming up that is categorized as horror.
Yes. And that one is actually intentionally spooky.
Yeah.
And scary and thrilling and stuff. But
so, yeah, what drew you to do that to us?
I think it's because I lived very close to fear my whole life. For a multitude of reasons.
Tennessee?
Well, Tennessee.
Fear Tennessee.
Fear Tennessee was right next door. No. I mean, both because, like, I mean, I guess I explored folklore and things like that, but there were a lot of legitimately dangerous things that I experienced as a child, and things that nearly took my life, things that threatened my life, both emotionally and physically. Different events, different people.
I feel like you're calling out Goosebumps right now.
I was the Goosebumps main character.
No, keep going because you were getting really serious and then I just took it in a different direction. Please keep going.
Keeping everybody breathing. Thank you, Shelley.
We will come back to that. Like, it is important in the middle of serious and scary to
yes.
laugh. But keep going with what you were talking about because I agree with you and I have something to add too.
Yes. So because because I live very close to fear, these were the things that were on my mind, is threats, mm-hmm. true fear, how to be safe. Like, I lived in a how to stay safe kind of place for years. And because of that, it ended up in my books. And that's, I didn't realize, I guess, when I wrote it, that like other people were like, this is really scary. And I was like, oh, that's just how my brain worked.
Yeah. So when you wrote, and this is the book coming out in August, right?
Yes, The Hungry Forest.
The Hungry Forest. When you set out to write this, were you thinking of this category as horror to start with? Or did you write a book and then go, oh, I guess I wrote a horror?
Yeah, honestly, I was like, it's a contemporary fantasy in my head. And I knew it was intentionally spooky and scary because the way it's structured is completely that way. But then once I finished it, I finished that book in 6 days. That was a wild, like, breathless ride. And then I kind of looked up and was like, I think this is a horror book. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh.
But or I'm really tired.
Or I'm really tired. Yeah. One of those.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's so really fast.
Yeah. It wasn't very good. That one needed more revision.
So one of the things you had a point you wanted to bring up first. Yeah, bring up your point.
I guess I was wondering, so like, as you're saying that, I'm thinking like, is that part of what I craved about scary books as a kid? Mm. I grew up between the ages of like 10 and 12. I think there were 4 girls my age within an hour of my house who were kidnapped. Oh. 2 of which were... you know, we know that they were murdered, and then 2 of which they didn't find. And I think that that has a little bit to do with it, that I was like, I'm going to have to face scary things. You know, this is a reality of the world that I live in. Like, this is where we are. And I wonder if that plays into it a little bit, and kind of being a woman, you know. Yeah. I was jogging today. And I'm going to tell you, it's a pathetic jog. And so anybody who sees me and is like, I'm going to kidnap her, like, honestly, still to this day, you could catch me. Like, I'm not fast. Mm. And so I'm running this back trail behind houses, and it's a trail. And I'm thinking, I should be running in front of houses where somebody could see me if mm-hmm. somebody tries to come and get me. And I'm like, I am a grown woman who still doesn't know Taekwondo, though, so maybe this is my but and I don't run fast, so I see where it's coming from, but I'm like, I wonder if other people think like this, like, how am I going to, like, do you guys, bald gentlemen in the room, do you guys think like that?
No, but I don't run either.
it evens out.
You're feeling pretty safe in your SUV. Yeah,
I feel pretty safe. No, here's the deal. Being a very large man, I don't fear. I don't have that constant fear. My fear is sometimes in the reverse, where I'm like, oh, I'm walking behind a woman. I should probably slow down. I should give it a little more space.
I wonder
if I'm making her uncomfortable or afraid. I will tell you that I'll tell a story about I had with Brandon Mole one time. We were at the Comic-Con down in San Diego, and we were with a bunch of friends, all males, and we were in an elevator together. And it was us and a woman that we didn't know. And we were kind of laughing and joking and talking with her and whatnot. And then she leaves the elevator. We get off the same floor. We end up all going outside. And about like 4 minutes later, I point out to the guys, like, hey, that's the girl from the elevator. Like, we should probably slow down so it doesn't feel like we're stalking her, right? Yeah. Like we don't want her to feel
uncomfortable. So that is something going on in the back of your head.
Right. So that's my solution to
right.
it. So this was Brandon's solution. He's like, oh, she might feel that way. I better run up and tell her that we're not following her, chasing her. And so Brandon chases this girl down just to tell her that he wasn't a threat, and that we weren't trying to hurt her, and that we just happened to be on the same road, and that we're not following her. And I was like, Brandon, I don't think I don't think we have.
His innocence.
It is his innocence.
So cute.
And it's so much what he just how he is, right? Uh-huh. Like I like to step back and he likes to step in those situations. So yeah.
Go ahead, Chad.
I was just gonna say, I think this is genius. Like middle grade horror in a lot of ways, because like fear is a real thing, right? That everybody feels, though we might have different types, different shades, however you want to describe it. But especially for kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they are little. Yeah. And they are pick upable and run away with.
And a lot of Jasons out there are scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just
because I was immediately thinking of like the horror Jason. And
but
I was like,
no, you're talking about me. He's talking about
Jason.
Me.
Yeah, either.
I went there too.
Yeah. Okay. I like how I'm the actual Jason though. That's even better. I'll tell you one other story when that happened to me. Which was growing up, I liked like spook alleys and haunted houses and that kind of stuff. There was something happened when I went with my wife when we were a little bit older, and the kids, like 16, 18 year olds, they were the ones running the spook alley and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I could see in their eyes that they were afraid of me, just some big bald bearded dude walking through their spook alley, and they were scaring everyone around me and would not interact with me at all. And I was like, okay, that was the position that I was in that situation. So
okay, that reminds me of the perfect reverse story. I'm sorry, I must
indulge
myself.
No. Sure. Yeah. Stories are the best.
Indulge yourself.
So I was trick-or-treating in Tennessee, and trick-or-treating in Tennessee is like a marathon because the houses are farther apart because we got more space back there. And so I'm hiking up this like big old driveway with my friends in high school, right? And we were like, they have like a bunch of different Halloween things. They've got like mannequins and stuff like that. And I'm like, whatever. I love the theatricalness of Halloween fun. And you have to like get to the very top by her patio to get the bowl of trick-or-treating, you know, goodies. And then me and my friends are walking and I'm lagging behind because I'm very small. And that means I've got short
your legs. Yeah.
Short steps, lots of them. Yes. And then I hear behind me and I instinctually am like footsteps behind me. There was no one behind me. So I turn around and punch someone in the face before I even know they're there. I smack, and this is a 9-year-old kid who was pretending, he was dressed up like a mannequin, like all of the other ones to do this, to come in and sneak him and scare him. Poor child. I right hook him. Lay him flat on his driveway.
See, you weren't as scared because you practiced your Taekwondo.
The Taekwondo helps.
That's awesome.
I do think.
Somewhere out there right now is some guy that's saying, let me tell you about one Halloween.
The shortest girl.
I thought I'd sneak up on this girl.
Good clock. Wow.
Never underestimate.
Well, let's talk a little bit about where we cross the line.
Can I hit on one thing before we do? Because I think that's definitely a place we need to go. But I think that one of the beautiful things as we're talking about all of this is that horror books, period, sad books, horror books, people going through big life changes, like these are great places to explore really hard emotions that are very safe.
Yeah. Yes.
So you get a lot because your brain doesn't know the difference between, I think they've shown this in studies, that your brain doesn't know if you're crying because a book character died, like your brain's like, oh, somebody died, like for reals. Yeah. Like it doesn't. So if you practice being scared and then winning again and again and again, you're going to be like, no, I'm brave enough. I can do this. Even though you literally have never done anything really scary in your life.
Yes.
You still think so. So I think that's part of what kids are
It's giving them
the
tools to do that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, for sure. You know, going back to like, where do we cross the line and whatnot in the 80s, in the MPAA, the rating system for movies, they had an issue, right? Which is, where do we put these films? And there was a handful of films that kind of stood out, films like Gremlins and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, or even Ghostbusters, right? Mm. Where they were too...
Not for kids.
Yeah, they were too scary and too graphic for little kids. Mm-hmm. And and
but not like R-rated.
But
like,
not R-rated.
You don't
not
restrict it to
And so that's when the PG-13 was created because of films like that. I've heard a lot of films take credit for the PG-13. Those are the ones that kind of stood out for me. But I think the same things happened in writing, right? Where this category, middle grade, is kind of a newish category, like PG-13, right? And so we as a society, we needed a place to put these stories that didn't fit in other categories. So when we're talking about horror
and we're talking about the middle grade audience, like an 8-year-old to about a 13-year-old, maybe.
Eight to 13. Yeah. Where are our lines? What are there hard rules, or is it kind of just a kind of fill it out type rule? Where do you see these lines at? Where wouldn't you cross, and where do you like to just kind of come up to that edge and creep over?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. The answer might be a little different depending on who you ask. But for me, what I'm trying to do is to scare a child, or rather maybe allow them to be scared.
Right.
Give
Invite
them the space
them.
To be scared rather than, but I'm not trying to make them feel unsafe. Because mm-hmm. to me, there is a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember that, like, that's when something truly disturbs you, mm-hmm. like, it's gone a little too far. And, you know, different kids have different tolerance levels yeah. for that. And that's the tricky thing about writing anything in horror, is that the person's tolerance might be completely different.
Which is why my very first chapter is scary, even though it's not the whole book scary. Does that make
gotcha.
Sense? But I wanted kids within the first page to be like, this is not my book.
Yeah. You've already paid for it. I don't need you to read it.
Well, I just didn't want the emails, you know?
Yeah. You tricked me.
Yeah, because if it started sweet for the first two-thirds and it's in that final act, you know, that it gets scary, then that's an issue.
They needed to have a decent idea of what level they were about to walk into. Yeah. But go ahead, keep going.
Yeah, no, like there are things, like, for example, in that sort of versatility of where your horror could be. I don't do horror movies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm like, me and my sisters have like this running joke whenever we watch something that has like a scary moment in the movie, because the music gets, you know, it gets all quiet and the music comes up and we all like stare and then we turn over the couch and pretend to vomit, because that's like our physical reaction to the scary music. And we're like, we can't handle this. But like in a book, I'm traveling there because I'm like, yes, I need someone to address my fear, mm-hmm. because I already have fear. In fact, Deka Herman, that's not how you say it, sorry. My brain sometimes sticks in Spanish pronunciation. Herman, I think, is probably how you say her last name. Deka, sorry if you're listening to this. I should just ask you how to say your last name. Deka, she wrote Hide and Seek and its subsequent sequels. It won the South mm-hmm. Carolina Award.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Fabulous book, fabulous lady. She once said, I was in a presentation with her we were doing for a school system, and she once said, like, I'm actually a huge scaredy cat. And she's like, but that works in my favor in horror because I have a lot of fears. And so I have a lot of fears to share.
Yeah. I know it scares people because it scares me. Yes. Yeah.
And
that's
so,
smart.
Like, that actually kind of gives you a good barometer mm-hmm. for like navigating how a child feels if you are yourself kind of fearful, because you can get kind of numb. You know, I know some true big horror movie fans, adore them even, but like the stuff they talk about, like, oh, it was so good, it had blank blank blank, and I'm like, oh yeah. No. But that, for me, it's about really bringing out and addressing the fearful things for a child. Like, and I think that middle grade is really, it's surprising how scary it can be compared to adults. Because adults go straight for the jugular, quite
they
literally.
Do. Right, and right, it's right. so fast, and it's not nearly fast. As fun. Yeah.
So less suspense is what you're seeing in adult horror.
Yeah. They kind of go faster than I would like most of the time. Sometimes they do a good job, but.
Yeah, like you almost like blank out because you're not there with it. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that was definitely spectacle.
Yeah.
But that in, I like, I once heard somebody say this about the book, not book, sorry, the video game Dishonored, where there's pacifist roots versus like murder roots, and you'd be surprised how much more horrifying the pacifist roots are, because the things you have to do to stop people, that isn't killing them ends up being almost more horrific. And I think that can happen in middle grade too. You have to use it carefully. But for example, unpacking like, okay, well, no one is getting like shot or their arms sawed off or things like that.
Right.
Thank goodness.
Nope.
But they might be get turned to stone.
Yeah.
And they're stuck there forever. Or they're a small little trinket in a witch's cabinet, like in night books or something, you know?
Right.
Turned into a shadow.
Well, you know, that stone can be crushed.
Yes.
And we'll never see that character again.
Right. And that, or even if they're in there.
And if you think about it's getting turned to stone and then having that stone be crushed, that is worse than chopping off all your arms and stuff. You're being dismantled, the same dismemberment type stuff, but it's not bloody.
But it doesn't register in our brains quite the same way.
Exactly.
You do have to be careful. There's lines, like for me, one of my lines is, for children, I will not touch anything that would go into that kind of like satanic-ish realm. Like anything, like I could use the word demon, but we would need to be in a fantasy world,
right?
If that makes sense, but not demon, like demonic, like you've been taken over.
Right.
Like
I
really stay away from all of those lines because they just feel like more than most kids would be able to want to handle.
Yeah, that's
one of my like hard lines.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And what you said, it's kind of combining two things that have been said before. Kind of by nature, you're writing a book that a kid can navigate fear on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
right. That they're going to be okay if they're reading it in their room.
Yes,
by themselves,
where they're safe,
and they can navigate it, and they can feel like, hey.
They can shut it when they're done for the day.
They can shut it, but I went on a journey. I learned how to. Someone conquered their fear, and it didn't scar me.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's overall rule. The ins and outs are going to be really hard.
Yes,
stay away from scarring.
Right. Yeah, you don't scar them for life. You allow them to go on a fearful journey that they come out the other side and are like, whew.
Yeah, that's important too. Out. That's a line. Like the kid comes out the other side.
Yes.
And the kid comes out the other side strong and okay. None of this like Hunger Games and she's like messed up for the rest of her life kind of thing going on. Like you have to come out. Well, you have to come out okay.
And that would be what age grade?
We're still talking
Hunger
probably.
Games? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That would be.
Hunger Games was written for, the YA audience. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I think it has just as much of an adult audience.
Yeah.
I don't think. I don't know. I think she did a good job keeping it YA safe for the most part, but I don't know that I would say that she was writing to a YA audience all the way through the series.
Yeah. I actually think that some of that comes from just fluctuations in the industry
audience
as well.
In the industry.
Who's reading young adult and what do we mean by middle grade, upper middle grade, young adult being its own weird dubious area of no man's land now.
We're starting to make new ones. Not me, other people.
Other people. I've talked to Brandon in the past about romance, for example, in middle grade.
Right.
And he talks about it. It's like it's crushes, it's blushes, it's first kiss or holding hands like a chaste hug or something like that. It's thoughts and
it's
stuff.
What you would be comfortable with your child in sixth grade doing.
Versus young adult, it's exploring more explicitly and doing that. So would you say there is something similar between young adult horror and middle grade horror with that type of those types of barriers and lines? And
I would say the same thing with romance. I would say the same thing with like language that you're allowed to use in middle grade.
Yeah.
There's a line, you know, like fear or violence. Like like violence, there's like a line, like you got your cool action book, but like
violence against kids.
A line.
Yes. In fact, sorry.
No, keep going.
But,
that was it.
In fact, there was I forgot to mention, but when I first wrote Cece, it was a young adult book. Because that's just kind of what I wrote at the time. And then when Harper offered, they were like, we wanted as a middle grade.
Yeah.
Is that okay? And I was like, keep talking. we'll see. But I ended up being really excited about it because I knew I did want to do middle grade one day. Just got to do it faster. But one of the things, that I ended up being like, they were like, okay, well now we need to make it middle grade. And I went through and I removed some of the extra romance that was there. you'll see some trait like remaining like little bits of it.
But
One of the big things I had to remove from CC was the level of violence. Like there was a 12-foot blood fountain when somebody was cut across the throat at some point. Okay. You know, because I was like, I looked it up and I was like, that's how far.
That doesn't work for a 9-year-old.
It's like, what do you mean? I was like, I looked it up. That is exactly how far an artery that's 12, cut.
12 feet.
But I removed that and instead I just zoomed out. That's one of the tools that I use for fear.
Oh, interesting.
Is like,
yeah, explain that a little more.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll use CC as an example, since Hungry Force is now yet. but in CC, there's a tournament, like it's a death tournament where people are fighting and their criaturas fight to the death. But that means it's a death tournament. There are people dying regularly.
So they have to die.
Yes. And one of the things that I incorporated in that to make it a little bit, I don't know if it's more palatable, but feels a little bit more palatable, is that like their bodies will just gently sink away into the desert to go back home.
Like right? The Wicked Witch.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of melt away.
But like the bad guys in a video game. You know,
right. Right. Yes, exactly. Turn into a poof.
You lost the video game. Yes. Which it feels very different than your 12-foot, how long? Blood everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, exactly. So like the old versions having like, there was one scene where the blood splattered on CC's face and she closed her eyes. And it was meant to show how sensitive she was, where she's, this is horrifying to her. I removed that clearly.
Sure.
But part of that was the zoom out effect, which to me is that you just give the reader more space away from what's happening so that they can take in the amount that they want to, but they're not like, I'm not smushing your face into what's happening.
Less detail.
Yes, less detail. You don't get as much close description. Sometimes the main character is even physically away from what is happening. There is like physical distance as well, but it's not dwelled on in the same way. So like the death tournament now, you know that like I say something like the opponent stopped moving and then the other character gets up and walks towards CC or something's like, you know, they've died because that's what the stakes are in the tournament. I'm not describing the cracking. Mm-hmm. I'm not describing the last rattling breath, things like that. Like I just pull away from it to give you the space to not like feel the crushing weight of the ramifications of that.
Yeah,
I think
that
of
sense.
Like if you were trying to write a war story, like a bunch of guys in the military war story. Now, if you're doing this for adults, the language is going to be very different than if you're doing this for children. Yeah. The violence is going to be very different than if you're doing this for children. But you still can say, this is somebody's experience in the trenches during the war.
Yeah.
Like you can, you know, you go like, here's World War One. This is what's going on. And you can tell a story. But I think that's like a very like, but this is really what happened. But we would never write that for a children's book, right? And and I think we naturally can understand that concept for where the lines are. And I think,
Tell me what role your editor plays in drawing that line for you. Because I assume if I was writing a children's horror book and I was doing a scene that I thought might be a little on the edge or crossing the edge, I think I would just write it and then be like, let's see what they have to say. let's test the waters here. And how much of that is your approach versus just self-editing in those moments and saying, hey, no, I know where the line is and I don't need to push it?
I think that's my approach with everything. Give me your feedback, but this is what I'm going to do first. In fact, when I was writing for Lego,
We have not even talked about
it. We haven't talked about it yet.
You're right. Yeah. Sorry.
Lego and horror? Bring it on.
Well, I bring that up, my first book with Lego that I did, because they were like, pitch us a story you want to do. Now, their stuff is about dreams and there are nightmares. So I'm like, nightmares? Opportunity.
Dreams? You had me at nightmares.
You had me at nightmares. And then I pitched them a plot line, you know, like a summary. And then they were like, that is too far.
Oh, nice.
The Lego crowd is really young.
Yes,
Lego crowd is super young.
Exactly. But I did that on
purpose.
And
super old. I'm just going to point that out, too.
It says till 99.
Let's just say the 6-year-olds aren't buying the Millennium Falcon, shall we?
But I actually did that on purpose because I remember I had listen. I love to listen to video game documentaries for whatever reason. And the Epic Mickey one, I listened to how the team had developed that. And what they did is they said that in order to find the boundaries for something like Mickey Mouse and, you know,
and the scariness, the rabbit, of Epic, and
and something like the spookier edge, because Disney did want a spookier edge. In order to find where the boundaries were, they said, we'll push it as far as we can. And that will give us a sense of what isn't okay and what is okay.
I was going to say something very similar in that. In some of my writings, I really disregard some people's feedback a little bit. Like, I take it into consideration, but I make my decision. In horror, if somebody says it's too far, I don't care where you are in my process. If you're a friend, a neighbor, a somebody's child, if you're, you know, like, if you say it's too far, I'm really going to take that into consideration.
Yeah.
Like, and that, so it's not just my editor. It's going to be everybody's feedback on that one.
And this is something we haven't brought up yet, but something you can do as you write, sometimes you can deal with some heavy stuff, but how your character is dealing with the circumstance, sometimes you can change a little bit. Like, you brought it up before, but if it's super scary and then we get a laugh break.
Let's talk about that breath there, that break.
You know, like a classic example is like an Avengers movie. Right. And this is more action than it is horror. Right. But you know, you go to the big final thing and they're killing aliens. Right. Mm-hmm. Or at least knocking them down. And
they're killing them. Don't. I mean, they're laying them down for a nap.
They're being absorbed back into the earth. Alternate earth.
They're not poofing. But when you have little moments when like Hulk punches Thor. Right. And he just goes shooting off to the side. Everybody laughs. Right. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I got this. These guys are treating it like this is huge stakes, but there's still this element of like hope. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can joke around a little bit.
Yeah.
No, they're not. You know, but that's.
They
That's
are
the
joking
idea.
At times.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the Goonies or whatever in really scary circumstances. But when they're together and somebody says something funny and they're running together.
Stranger
that
Things,
how we feel
I think,
about
is horror. Yes. And you see a lot in Stranger Things where they get you to laugh and then jump scare you.
Yeah.
Because you're in such a like vulnerable place when you're like laughing that you're just like, things are good. Life's good. They're hugging, you know? And then boom. We get big scary monster.
In fact, you can use the breath to make the next thing very scary because you kind of settle people's nerves back down. Because when people are hyped up
the whole time, ew.
Yeah, I was like, if you're hyped up the whole time, it actually numbs you out at a certain point. So you do actually have to give like rise and fall, even to keep it scary. But like, I also think that some breaths should just be sacred. You should give them some sacred breaths that aren't interrupted, aren't used that way.
Right.
In fact, one of my tools I like to use in order to make sure children don't feel unsafe versus frightened in books is I like to give them one character who will always be safe. Always is good. You know, a lot of indie video games and things. Thinking about video games a lot, I guess, right now. they'll give you like a character you love and it will be to do the twist and be like, oh, they were the evil all along, you know,
right.
To the point that I'm like, yes, I know they're evil.
So tell me how do you signal to a reader that this character is always safe without coming out and saying, hey, we're going to tell you a scary story and this person is never going to get hurt, right? How do you do that?
Well, I actually don't mean even safe as in like they're safe from harm.
They're safe to the main character.
They are the safe place of the main character. You know, like in Avatar The Last Airbender, which is not horror at all, but has very high stakes, right?
Yeah.
Iroh is always a safe character. Yes. He never turns. He never betrays. Yeah. You know, he's never secretly evil. He had a bad past and he's good now and he stays that way, right? You need like an anchor character like that. Like in The Hungry Forest, there's a character who is a masked curse, but she helps the brothers and she is always safe. Even when she's going through terrible, scary things herself, even when she's like in very great danger to help them, like she's always consistently loyal and good to them. And I think you need that when everything is turned against you. There is one spot, there's one safe place because I think that's probably the most unsafe.
The biggest fear.
Yes, is being completely alone something people don't recover well from.
Again, how do you signal that to the writer that you're not going to do a bait and switch on the reader, that you're not going to do a bait and switch on this thing? Or is it the fact that you just don't do a bait and switch?
I think it's just that you don't.
I think that the kids are going to trust that person, and as long as you don't betray that trust, that's what she's saying.
Gotcha.
Or don't see the foreshadowing that there will be a betrayal.
Yeah.
Or
don't mess with
Don't mess with that one character. You can even have two characters who seem safe. One always is, and the other one
is questionable.
It starts to build up that maybe they're not safe, but one has to stay safe.
Gotcha. No, I love that. I think that's great advice.
And another thing you can do to kind of navigate the fear is to have a character or two that kind of like it. That are up for the adventure.
Oh, gotcha.
It's the Seth in Fablehaven who throws themselves into danger.
They're like Army of Ghosts. Like, you fools. This is awesome. Yeah. Lockwood and Company, I think, is good. Yeah. I mean, first of all, it's great storytelling.
Yes.
But you've also got
scary. Well done, Jonathan Straub.
That love the adventure of the scary. They still get very scared, but they're also like, yeah,
they're
let's
in it.
Tackle
yeah,
this,
yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Which does help a young reader kind of navigate it.
Yeah, and they get to wear that bravery as they read it. Yeah.
Can I throw out a couple more? Because just names of authors who are doing this well in that middle grade genre. And one is Mary Downing Hahn. Like, she's got a bunch of books out there. I loved Guest. Took... there's more than one word to most of her books, but
the one word ones are scary.
But I'm an adult who's reading these books and thinking solid, like that was solidly scary. Thank you for writing but without crossing lines.
Right.
I don't feel like she crosses lines. Lindsay Curry as well has some fun ones out there. I'm trying to remember. I want to say It Took Us. Oh, It Found Us. It Found Us and Scritch Scratch. Oh. Like, they're good.
I've seen those around a lot.
Yes. Already. Also, just the title.
Yeah.
Like, ooh. Instant clench. You know?
They're fun. And I'm like, yay. Like, if my 8-year-old self is so happy.
Yeah.
And go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to add, I know Joshua Allen, he was actually my creative writing professor.
Oh.
And he does horror, but he does
Sarah
short
Allen
story.
Does too.
Yes, yes. I was like, the Allens. Yeah. I don't know if they even know each other, but but I know them. and I've heard great things about Sarah Allen's books. I've read Joshua Allen's, and he has short stories, lots of short story ones. I was going to say, the nice thing about that is also that the kid knows the story will close soon. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so knowing that there is an out. And he also has a really a nice technique that I'm trying to implement in mine anyway, is that you have clear rules so the child can anticipate who's going to experience.
If they break those rules,
the horror comes.
Yes.
You know, and that so there is a predictability. It still ends up being very
scary. It sounds
scary.
Like fairy tales.
If I don't say Beetlejuice 3 times,
then Beetlejuice can't. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Now, I could see parents listening to this podcast going, huh, I'm never going to let my kid read anything, sell me on that, Shelly. Why should parents go, hey, my kids are into this kind of stuff and I'm cool with it.
Well, I think that every single person has a different line for themselves when it comes to horror. Mm-hmm. And so a parent applying their line to the child is just as silly as me applying it to anybody else. The child will tell you if it's too far or if it's not okay. But at the same time, obviously you're the parent and you can make some general guidelines, but I don't think you should discourage them from reading. And I think that it's silly to think that this is something that's going to warp them when you know that they're going to have to read Dracula and Frankenstein in yes. high school. Like right, it's right, right. not, and, you know, and there's parts of Shakespeare that get horror
Ooh, Macbeth.
Levels. And, yeah. Like,
which, by the way, Dracula is an awesome book. Yeah. I'm not a horror guy, but I'm not.
Literally,
but Dracula is a pretty great book.
Literally one of my favorites. Yeah. Frankenstein's pretty awesome too. But I guess all I'm trying to say is that I wouldn't try to hold them back from something that they might need.
Yeah.
And you don't know what they need necessarily. I mean, I think as parents, we always want to know what they need.
Right,
but
right,
I think
right.
this is something that you might be like, I don't need this. But you don't know that your child doesn't need this.
Yeah.
And as long as it's not crossing, like this middle grade stuff I just recommended, we're not crossing lines. You're fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're totally safe inside of this space. And as long as it's not crossing like family values kinds of lines, let them explore being brave inside of a safe space.
Mm-hmm. Or a great thing too is read one together.
Yes.
Oh, I love it.
Yes.
We've talked about that before. It's yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. And maybe you have to
scary.
Read it during the day because
yes.
it's a little scary.
that
oh, I've had parents tell me, you know, that, oh, I read these ones during the day. We don't do them right before bed. Right. But then you can talk about how they're feeling and if they like it or if they don't. And if you've got like, I'm not sure I like the goat, you know, but that's a great thing about books is that mm-hmm. it brings up stuff in a safe place, right?
Right.
A safe and way.
If you decide and this child decides it's not for you, that's fine. Nobody has to pick up these things.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. See how your child reacts. If you're like, I'm actually impressed with their level of bravery in this circumstance.
Yeah.
It might be a really cool thing. Or you might be like, no, this kid can't go to sleep that night if we read this story. we're not going to read this time.
Yeah, it's so, too far for you.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
How does writing in this category, middle grade horror, how does that affect invitations to do school visits? Are you doing school visits for middle grade horror?
I've had people invite me already, so
yeah.
I think most of them are just really excited. Actually, I was talking with the librarian from Seattle about this when I was telling her it was middle grade horror about two, you know, brothers and stuff, and she was like, oh, I'm so happy to hear that. She's like, I need more horror because a lot of my reluctant readers,
yes,
a lot of my boys,
oh. reluctant
need
readers,
it. You know, they're like, that's the only thing they will read. And if they get used to reading, then they start to become more confident and can read other things too.
Yeah.
And she also said that she was like, I haven't had a lot of like boy main characters in a long time. So that was, she was very excited about the combo. I was like, oh, nice. Good. I didn't do that on purpose, but great. I think that's an important part is that like, yes,
readers and librarians are clamoring.
Yes.
For
horror
stuff.
Right now. Yeah. And I think that's,
and that might probably chill at some point.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I'm sure things come in waves,
they
but
yeah,
yeah. like it's a, if, okay, sorry. I have multiple thoughts intersecting.
Go.
On one. I'm like, readers, you have to lean into what they are willing to do to be able to get them to even, you know, the greater heights, if you want to call them the greater heights to you, right? You're like, hey, grow their confidence in horror and things like this. And then you might be able to start to talk to them about like some Frankenstein classics or other things and start bridging them elsewhere, you know? Or that you've got someone reading. This is still good.
Yeah. Their vocabulary is increasing.
Yes.
Their ability to focus is increasing.
Their empathy. Yeah. ability.
There's a ton of empathy inside of horror, especially children's
horror.
Oh,
so much.
Horror.
In fact, it relies completely on it or else you wouldn't be afraid.
Right.
You know? and so it's a very good exercise of empathy. And I forgot where else I was going.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. No, I'm just agreeing.
Just
I guess.
expand on that empathy thing. I you touched on it. I think it makes sense, but I think just expand on it just a little bit more because I've never looked at horror as needing empathy, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it completely relies like the fact that the whole draw of horror is the thrill of fear, right? You have to be putting yourself in those shoes to experience the fear, to be the subtle descending of fear into a peaceful place, a safe moment, and then the ramp up to suspense. Like all of those things require you to be walking through the character's shoes. You have to be afraid of the peril happening to them, the stakes that matter to them. Like in the Hungry Forest, Ryan loses his brother in the forest at one point and has to like go face these scary monsters he was avoiding in order to get him back. And things like that. And that wouldn't mean anything if you didn't know that Ryan is working through his feelings with his brother and has to try to mend it. It wouldn't mean anything if you didn't know that Ryan is actually very afraid and very afraid of admitting he's afraid. And like none of that hits, none of it matters, none of it impacts without that powerful empathy. Which reminds me also that like one of the quotes I love from Joshua Allen was that horror can sometimes be the most moral genre because there are clear boundaries of good and evil. There has to be because that's what creates the horror evil, you know, the darkness, the thing that should not be happening, the great and terrible, right? And that impacts so powerfully how a child navigates, therefore, not only the world in there, but what it does to develop their brain, to develop their way of accessing and navigating real life. I know my nephews were big fans of horror. We bonded over Five Nights at Freddy's. but I know it hit one of them particularly more even than the others, and I think it was because he's probably the most emotional. I won't name him so he doesn't get embarrassed about that. but that, like, he's probably the most emotional and the most sensitive, actually, out of his brothers. And he bonded the most with horror, I think, because
you it's have an to outlet. Practice being brave, too.
Yes, yeah. Because he actually needs that practice. He actually needs some place to address the fears in his mind. And he needs some way of using all of his extra feelings and putting it somewhere and then being able to return to the real world and deal with it.
You know? And I think, like, it's big. Big emotion, right? Yes. So it's gonna like wonder is cool, but it's not nearly as big of an emotion, you know?
Right.
And wonder is a great emotion and I love using wonder, but it's just not like this is like, whoa, it's the kind of, you know, we all knew that kid who like was like, you know what, that was a good book. And we're like, because it made you cry. We're, you know, and I think that's the truth. Like, we're like, dang it, that is why I liked it. I didn't realize that, but it is just that big emotional response and outlet. Great at that. Yeah.
Well, I love, I mean, as we close on this, I just love that thought of if you have a kid and you want them to be a little more empathetic, you want them to be a little more brave, if you want them to have some of these attributes, to be able to see good from evil, and that if that's what you want your kid to do, grab a nice middle grade book. Horror book for them, yeah. and let them indulge in those attributes that they'll learn from that genre. So that's fantastic.
And for some parents, it might not be what you think it is. Just read one.
Yeah.
Right.
Like sometimes
right.
They think middle grade horror is like a horror. It's people that write these have your kid's best interest in mind, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just a scary
that's a beautiful
story
thought too, to think about.
A story that has scary in it, right? Yep. Is really all it is.
Well, why don't we wrap up? Let's have all of you kind of pitch what you have coming up next. Why don't we start with Chad and Shelley? Do you guys have stuff coming out?
Yeah, we got two books in the shoot. It'll still be a little while till they come out. And we're known for contemporary stories.
Yeah, they're not very scary. they're scary in their own way.
But
they're not like, there's no ghosts.
And these, not yet. No.
Yet.
But these next two are very different for us. So we're really excited.
I know you guys are early on them, so you can't talk much about them.
Right.
Can you at least tease when you could possibly read them? How far in it?
I know you guys have
a year out. 2026.
Yeah. Not 2026. Yeah. So we're talking 2027.
Maybe into 2028 for the second book.
Maybe we could hear more end of 2026.
Yeah.
Like
titles.
You guys could probably hear more in a few months.
Okay.
Can I just pitch Ghost Sitter real fast, though?
Yeah.
My one horror for kids is called Ghost Sitter, and it's about a girl who's being haunted by ghost toddlers. Because everybody knows that toddlers are a little bit evil. And they follow her to school every day and they sleep on her head at night and they squeeze the toothpaste out of her while she's trying to brush her teeth and they just drive her absolutely insane and she's got to figure out how to get rid of them. So
that's great. And we've had Kayla on several episodes, but that was the first time we got the snort laugh out of her.
Yeah. On that. So, on the horror.
Yeah. That's what we're doing. Kayla, it has been just a blast having you here for the last several months of our release and whatnot. But you're fantastic. Tell us one more time a little bit about your book coming out in August. And if people want more information about you, where they can go find you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's been lovely being on the podcast. Thank you guys so much for inviting me. You guys are awesome. So conversational.
Oh,
hilarious.
I'm going to say this too. Kayla let me know she's actually a listener of the podcast as well. So that was a fun
cool.
treat. So, yeah.
Yes, a long time listener, first time participator. Growing up slowly, you know. Yeah, so this has been really lovely. Thank you. And yes, I do have a horror book, relevant, coming out in August, and it's called The Hungry Forest, and it's about two brothers, Ryan and Teddy, who have recently lost their father and are not dealing well with their grief in very different ways. And when they suddenly hear their dad start calling to them from the local haunted forest, everyone knows not to go in, but what do you do when you hear the dad that you miss so much calling for you? So they do go in, and then they get trapped in this forest that is, as it turns out, as haunted as the legends say. They will have to face monsters and cursed creepy things and creatures and things absolutely bent on keeping them there until sunrise so that they're stuck there forever. But if they can face themselves and each other, they might just find a way.
And there's a safe character in this.
And there's
book.
A safe character in it. See, I promise.
The safe monster.
And I'm so excited to hear you guys have a book probably coming out in 2027 because I also have another horror book coming out in 2027.
Oh.
Excited. Title pending.
Excellent.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the Mulling It Over family. You're always welcome to come back and tell us more about your books coming out. We loved having you on the show. And thank you to all our listeners for joining us on another episode of Mulling It Over.